SpringFest means more sun, more fun, and more free at Lowe's. Keep your yard in line with an additional free EGO 56-volt battery when you buy a select EGO mower, trimmer, or blower. Plus, keep landscaping fresh with Stay-Green 1 cubic foot garden soil, 5 bags for $10. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 4/8 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
This is the Sean Salisbury Show.
You better run, you smart aleck.
Who is it, Brad?
Just a bunch of punks who better watch their back.
Follow the show on Twitter at S. Salisbury
Show. I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
From the SB Nation Radio Studios in Houston, with the Bench Warmers, here's Sean Salisbury.
As we continue our It's Over, things that we want over or we wish were over that are driving us crazy, a couple more for me. I'm tired of the politics dominating our sports every single day all week long. It's exhausting to me. I can't keep up with it. I can't. And I hate it. It's got me to the point where I'm so jaded. I don't care if a guy sits on his rear end on the sidelines or does jumping jacks or stands. I can't take it. And then every single show when you turn on your TV, that's all we're talking about. And the president. And I'm over it. I am. I'm over it. Protest away. Whatever. I'm just over it. I just want it to be all sports and entertainment and laughs. I'm so tired of this part of it. And you're entitled, but I don't have to like it, nor do I. I'm also over not having a hockey team in Houston. It's over not having a hockey team in Houston. I want one here, whether we support it or not, because it will be the only season ticket I'll buy in a sports team. I don't care about going to an NFL game in person. I have no interest, especially the product they're putting on the field. It's awful right now in most cities. Kansas City, it's not. In most cities, it's a bad product.
I will say Carolina, I saw a picture from their last home game. I think it was Monday night. There was about 200 people there. So maybe they look to move.
Good. Come here.
Yeah.
I'll take it. I'll buy a
hit
season ticket.
Hit or miss
ticket.
In southern markets.
So that's it.
Atlanta was horrible.
And I got another one. You guys tell me. Celebrity self-importance. That the celebrities, now they're entitled to their opinion. I'm talking about, for me, their self-importance to think that the world hangs on their every word. That this celebrity, this actor, this comedian, that everything they say, that we hang on their every word, that they are the final straw, the last hurrah, good night, Irene, Katie bar the door, it's over, Johnny. That the celebrity self-importance of thinking that, quite frankly, most of the world now in their little Instagram, Twitter world maybe, but that really... significant in some ways, yes, if they're making a difference. But the celebrity self-importance in sports, entertainment, all of it, we really don't care what you say about most things.
Well, you don't, but too many people do. That's the problem.
Say, that's the sad thing
and
about
why
America.
That's why it's over. That's why I'm not speaking for the 25 million that follow Khloe Kardashian, because my it's over is celebrity self-importance. You're not that important. You dress the same way normally, I think, than the rest
of us.
Why
you gotta bring Chloe into this?
Yeah, why is it about Chloe?
I don't know. Big ups to Chloe.
The Sean Salisbury Show continues now with the Bench Warmers. Here's Sean Salisbury.
All right, so I'm laying in the sheets last night thinking, okay, for a segment for today, thinking, you know, what would happen? We always talk about, man, with Brady, if the defense was better or this for individual superstar quarterbacks. But what would happen if we decided to play a little Ferris wheel game? And we took, the Seahawks are in first place. And we took Russell Wilson and stuck him on the 49ers. And then took the fourth place 49ers quarterback and stuck him on the third place. And just went around. Just kind of first to fourth, fourth place to third, third place to second, second place to first. So Jared Goff with the Seahawks. And we'll start with the NFC. We'll do the AFC tomorrow. But rolling through and saying, okay, what would it completely change the dynamic, and who would be best off with the new quarterback on their team? Would it make a difference? Does Russell Wilson make a difference on a last place 49er team? So let's have a little fun, and let's actually start out West Segs.
Okay.
And we'll start with that. And so we're going to rotate quarterbacks and play a little duck, duck, goose and put them in their spot, and we're going to give them a different team and see what kind of an impact it has.
All right. Well, let's start the one you just mentioned, Russell Wilson to the San Francisco 49ers.
Robin?
Yeah, I think that's the team's biggest position of need. It would certainly be an improvement for that team.
Well, okay, improve, but what would it do? What, I mean, would it make them 6 wins better, 1 win better, a playoff team? What? How big of an impact would it make?
Marginal. four or five wins.
Okay.
So they're 0-5 right now. I would say they'd have at least two wins, possibly three wins. They'd be in the hunt for the division. I mean, if you put Russell Wilson on a team with Carlos Hyde, he'd actually have a better offensive line in San Francisco. It's not a great offensive line. It's better than what he's working with in Seattle. They'd have at least two, three wins at this particular time. He beat the Rams with a bad team, with a bad line.
I would say they're somewhere over a course of a season.
And let's not forget, they still got the rest of their team. Defense, right. Special teams, coaches, all that.
I would say they're a 5-6 win team over the course of a season. I mean, he would obviously help because he's better than Brian Hoyer. But I still think there's a lot of deficiencies on that team.
Agreed.
They're still the worst team in the division.
I think he's a great player. I don't think he's good enough to take a team that's not a playoff team, by far not a playoff team, that's in the first pick of the draft type of team, and turn them into an 8 or 9 win team. I'm not buying it. They still finish. Them and Arizona still battling for last place. They wouldn't even overtake the Rams, I don't think, when I look at that whole roster. Great player, not good enough to get him to the playoffs.
Brian Hoyer to the Arizona Cardinals.
I think they'd be worse off. I don't think Hoyer's a good quarterback. The only thing he's good at is to win picks in the postseason. They're already a bad team, and they'd be worse with him.
Yeah, they would take a step back. He doesn't throw the ball down the field like Palmer does, and that's what they do in that system with Bruce Arians. So, yeah, they would definitely take a step back.
Arizona would be angry here. They would take a step. They would rival the 49ers for that 5-6 win.
I respect Hoyer as a backup, and I know he plays hard, but they would finish in last place in the division if Russell Wilson was there and Hoyer was in Arizona. There, meaning in San Francisco and Hoyer's in Arizona, they do take a step back without Carson Palmer. Palmer, he may throw some bad interceptions, but he also makes some big plays and is capable of them. They would be in contention to be the first pick of the draft next year.
Palmer to the Rams.
I actually think the Rams would be worse off, and here's why. Because that team is bought into Sean McVay, and I think I'm sensing like a youth movement. I think Carson Palmer to McVay, that kind of symbiotic relationship, wouldn't be the same as that mentorship between Goff and Sean McVay.
All I see with the Rams is guys, except with the exception of the Seattle game, guys are running wide open down the field because of McVay's scheme, and he's got a running game with Gurley there. Be pretty much the same thing. I mean, Jared Goff's been great, but this team would pretty much be the same with Carson Palmer.
Yeah, I think they'd be really similar. I do like, obviously, Jared Goff a little more at this point where they're at in their
fresher
careers.
Legs.
Yeah, for sure. But Palmer would fit right in that offense.
I would say they're close to the same as well. I think Palmer's capable of a few more big plays, but I also think he's capable of a few more big mistakes. Mm-hmm. And we have not seen Goff in the postseason. I have seen Carson Palmer, but I think this team stays the same. I think they're in the hunt. I think they're a playoff battle with Seattle type of team. I don't think you get a lot of sway in there. I think it flatlines a little bit and stays the same. The one thing that Jared Goff can do, buy you a little more time with his legs at this age.
All right, Jared Goff to the Seattle Seahawks.
I think the Seahawks would be much worse off. He would collapse. He would fold like a lawn chair behind that offensive line. One of the things that makes Wilson so good is he can extend plays with his legs, and I don't see that out of Goff.
Yeah, it's a really tough spot to put Goff in with a terrible line, not a lot of weapons. Russell Wilson makes so many plays with his legs. They would definitely take a step back.
There's a lot of quarterbacks in this league that would fold like that behind that offensive line. So, yeah, they'd be worse off with Jared Goff.
Too young to make a big difference yet, and it would not appeal to his skill set because he'd take too many hits. Russell Wilson's as good as we have in this league at making things happen and escapability. The Seahawks defense would have to carry him. I'm not sure they're a playoff team. So overall, the Rams win the biggest and the 49ers because of Russ Wilson. But when I say the Rams win the biggest, because take Russell Wilson away and put Carson Palmer in place of Goff and Goff in Seattle, I think the Rams win the division with Palmer as opposed to Goff in Seattle. That's my opinion. I think it would be very difficult for Goff to do what Russ Wilson does.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the NFC North. Aaron Rodgers to the Chicago Bears.
That's hard to say. I mean, who's going to catch the ball? So maybe slightly better just because he's a great quarterback and can carry a team, but they still have the supporting cast is still bad on offense.
They'd be 4-1 or 5-0. That's how good Aaron Rodgers is. If you look at the defense, he'd have a better defense in Chicago than he has in Green Bay. Yeah, you don't have
better run game too.
Yeah, you don't have Jordy Nelson, but as you mentioned, you have a better run game. And how many times have we seen Aaron Rodgers buy time in the pocket, outside the pocket, to let receivers get open? He does that better than anybody in the league. They'd be one of the best teams in the NFL.
Yeah, they'd be the best team in the division, in my opinion. I mean, give them that defense, that offensive line, that running game. He can make any receiver good.
No, he'll make receivers better. They're the division champs, and quite frankly, might actually. Now, Jordy, now the receivers make a difference in Green Bay, but the rest of the personnel, the Bears are on par, running game and defense. I think that the Chicago Bears not only win, but they become a dangerous playoff team. He's that important. I think he's that good. That's a big get.
Mitchell Trubisky to the Vikings.
I think they'd be better than they are right now with Case Keenum and a injury-prone Sam Bradford. I mean, that's a Super Bowl-caliber roster. They just need a quarterback that's consistent and healthy.
Who's the starter, Keenum or Bradford? What are we saying, Keenum?
I had Bradford.
Kind of a combination. Okay, that's fair. Go ahead.
All right, well, if it's Bradford, I would say they take a little bit of a step back just because he's – and I understand Bradford struggled, but I'm assuming at some point Bradford would get healthy, and what we saw in week one, he was incredible. So just because he's a rookie, I don't imagine him doing the same things that Bradford does this year.
Okay.
I think the big thing would be with Dalvin Cook out. I think that's why they would take a little step back with Trubisky just because he is young. But there's a lot of weapons there that he doesn't have in Chicago he'd have some fun with.
I think, you know, I love Trubisky. I think they take a step back even if Case Keenum's the quarterback this year.
Yeah.
Long term, no, because Case Keenum knows that offense. He's played pretty doggone well. The Minnesota Vikings would not make the playoffs with Trubisky, but they'd see some great future.
Sam Bradford to the Detroit Lions.
I think the Lions would take a step back. I mean, it's almost a sure thing that Matthew Stafford was going to lead a fourth quarter comeback. When the Lions were down in the fourth quarter, you really weren't that worried about it because what Stafford was able to do with this team. So he's the definition of clutch. And honestly, I think he's right behind Brady and Breeze and Rodgers as that next group of quarterbacks. He's that good. He's right there with him.
Yeah, I need him to win a playoff game, though, but put Stafford in that category. But I would say they definitely take a step back. Stafford is really, really good.
Yeah, they take a giant step back, in my opinion.
I do, too. They don't make the playoffs. Stafford's explosiveness blows Bradford's out of the water. This team, you just don't make the same big plays. They'd be playing too much horizontal football. We got to pick it up.
Keep going. Matt Stafford to the Green Bay Packers.
Stafford to the Packers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Slightly worse.
I would say it's a little more than slight, just because that roster is not that good, and Aaron Rodgers makes them look that much better.
Yeah, I think they obviously get worse because Aaron Rodgers is top one quarterback in the league right now, top two with Brady. I do think they take a
step. When Aaron Rodgers' career is done, he'll be a top five quarterback of all time, if not better. He'll be on the Mount Rushmore when he's all done. I believe that. They would take a step back. Those are two really talented, but Rodgers is just so good with the release, and he's so accurate. They would take a step back, but would contend for the playoffs with Stafford.
Yeah. NFC South, Newton to the Saints.
About the same. If Cam Newton continues to play like he has these past 2 weeks, and he's playing like he was when he won the MVP in 2015, I think they'd be about the same.
So Winston on the Saints, Winston is too inaccurate to be good in that offense. He's proven that he turns the ball over consistently. They would take a step back. I mean, Drew Brees doesn't get enough.
I'm talking about Winston. Yeah, didn't you say Cam Newton?
And also, I thought you said Stafford when you said Bradford. So I'm just
Stafford. Yeah, you said Winston, not Winston, but he's talking about Cam Newton. You said Winston.
Oh, I'd say the Saints take a step back with Newton either way.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they take a step back. Drew Brees is really damn good.
Makes some great plays with his feet, but Drew Brees is as accurate as we've ever had ever playing this position. Accuracy matters. He gets the ball out quicker. They take a step back.
Brees to the Bucks.
Slightly better.
I would say massively better. Jameis Winston has not played well this season, and Drew Brees is still one of the top 3-4 quarterbacks in the league.
Put Brees on with those weapons, that may be top offense in football.
Put Brees in Tampa, Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
Maybe the best team in the NFC right now. I'm dead serious.
Matt Ryan to the Carolina Panthers.
Again, which Cam Newton do we have? You know, assuming the way he's played these past 2 weeks, maybe slightly better.
I would say they're about the same, just because that's a tricky offense because they rely on Cam's legs so much, and Matt Ryan can't really do that. So I would say it's about the same.
I would say slightly better. Slightly better. I would take Matt Ryan.
What Cam can do with his feet, Matt can't. And what Matt can do with his arm, Cam can't.
Yeah.
So I think we get a team that would be a playoff contender and a division possible winner.
Real quick. Wentz to the Giants.
The Giants' problem is not their quarterback. Their biggest problem is not their quarterback. Who's he going to throw the ball to right now? Obviously, he's a better quarterback than what we're seeing from Eli Manning right now, so slight edge, but they still have a slew of problems.
I would say just slightly better because Wentz can make some plays with his legs that Eli can't make.
Yeah, they're better either way. If they have the wide receivers, if they don't have the wide receivers, they're better.
Wentz is a better player at this point. They're a playoff contender if the receiver – when I say playoff contender – because Wentz can buy more time than Eli. He's not just a sitting duck. And if they had all the receivers healthy, they're a team that they wouldn't be 0-5.
Eli to the Cowboys.
They'd be worse. Even with that good of an O-line, they'd be worse with Eli.
Yeah, they would be worse. Dak Prescott's been really good this year.
Oh, he wouldn't have bad last year either.
Yeah, Dak Prescott's only getting better. Of course they're
worse. Eli'd make some plays, but Dak Prescott's proven that he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. They'd be worse.
Dak to the Redskins.
About the same. I like what Kirk Cousins is doing this year.
Yeah, I would say this one would be pretty similar because Kirk Cousins, outside of the first game, he's been really good.
Yeah, I'd say I do like Dak a little more, so I'd say slightly better, but close to the same.
At this stage, a wash right now because Kirk Cousins will put up some numbers, a playoff contender with either quarterback.
Cousins to the Eagles.
A little bit better with Wentzy.
I would say they would take a little bit of a step back just because Wentz is on the move so much in that offense, and Kirk Cousins is really dependent on his weapons, and we've seen that in the past.
Yeah, I would take Wentz as being a little better than Cousins, so I think they'd take a step back.
I'm going to take Wentz, too. The one thing Cousins has got to cut down on is the one costly interception, but not a heavy step back. They'd still be a playoff contender. Okay, real quick, who's the biggest win of them all?
Who got Rodgers? The Bears?
Yeah. See, I think I was going to say the Chicago
Can
Bears.
This happen?
Chicago Bears, without question, win this and become a dominant. And the Drew Brees Tampa Bay Bucks are second.
Those two.
Yep.
I still don't know what the Rodgers Bears thing because who's he throwing the ball to? I mean, he's always had a number one receiver. The Bears, you can even name
that guy. That guy can throw it to Harry Hatchett rear end and Joe Sixpack and still throw for about 4,500.
Yeah, he made it to the playoffs without Jordy Nelson.
Well, a little baseball talk next. John Farrell's out. We're going to discuss that. Two possible replacements. And then at about 20 minutes, we're going to have Casey Smith on from NBC in Boston. We'll talk college football, Boston Red Sox, New England Patriots, maybe get an update on Brady's AC sprain. It's the Sean Salisbury Show. It's BN Sports Baseball Talk next. It is postseason baseball. No better drama in sports. Next.
This is the Sean Salisbury Show. Here are your hosts, the Bench Warmers and Sean Salisbury.
Poll questions up at S. Salisbury Show. What's your favorite high-profile sports event to watch? World Series, Stanley Cup playoffs, Super Bowl, or the NBA Finals? That's up there. Vote at S. Salisbury Show on Twitter. Casey Smith's going to join us in a few minutes. We'll talk Boston sports and what's going on in college football. But first, guys, we'll get our take on a little bit of baseball and what's going on. Update on the game today, Segs, with Washington at Chicago.
Yeah, currently
game four.
We are bottom six, two outs. Chris Bryant just struck out. That's Strasburg's ninth strikeout of the game. So Anthony Rizzo will come up 1-0 Nationals, bottom of the sixth.
And Arrieta still in the game?
No, he was pulled after four innings.
Okay.
Gave up two hits, one unearned run. Five walks and four Ks.
It's like the Michael
walks.
Jordan flu game.
Yeah, it's raining. The ball's not carrying very well. We saw one big hit that was warning track power. The wind's blowing. It's rainy, so that humidity and that rain will knock keep the ball in the ballpark unless you crush it tonight.
Yeah, Nationals scored on an Addison Russell error.
Yeah, okay, booted one and run scored.
Yep.
This is if you're watching it, it's if you get the end zone, the center field camera view of Steven Strasburg, he's filthy when he's on.
That curveball is
stupid. Absolutely.
I don't know how
right-handers or left-handers, they can't touch it. You can question his toughness or mental toughness or emotional toughness or his sniffles all you want. When he decides to step up and toe the rubber, he's a filthy pitcher when he's right. To the Red Sox we go, eliminated back-to-back years, quick out. Last year to Cleveland, this year to the Houston Astros. Right move to fire John Farrell. I think most people think so. I don't ever like to see people lose their jobs, no matter how much I criticize Farrell. It's a bummer, but it is the business. You know, going in, I've never seen a manager or coach. I mean, you know you're a manager or coach when you get fired. That's how you know you've been in the business. Most do. There's very few that don't. Farrell took it, and he's out. Now, will he be a bench coach? Will somebody else hire him? Probably. I'm sure he will. Don't know if he'll be a manager again this next year. But he's out. The Boston Red Sox on their search now. Names like Alex Cora have come up. And who did you?
Bobby Valentine?
No, that's not going to happen. You know, you'll be the names. Did I hear Sandy Alomar Jr.'s name come up?
Yeah.
Or bantered about?
So he's always a.
There'll be some guys. I mean, if it's not one of those guys, look for a catcher. They usually get jobs. So we'll see what goes on with Farrell, but I think it probably had to happen. And I'm anxious to talk to Casey Smith about the pulse of how the players feel. I know what we hear, how the players feel about John Farrell. Had he stayed? And now that he's fired.
Yeah, I mean, you had to get rid of the guy. I mean, just look at the situation that happened this year. You had the Dennis Eckersley thing, where Eckersley came onto the plane, and David Price confronted him and was swearing at him, and they never apologized for it. Okay, that's a Hall of Famer who David Price like
so
a bull.
So do you think that's on Farrell, or you think that's Price?
No, that's on Price, but that's also on Farrell. The fact that nobody apologized to Dennis Eckersley. You had the issue where, and I don't think it's that big of a deal, but you had the Apple Watch situation where you're stealing signs. You got penalized this year for batting out of order. Batting out of order.
Is this a little league?
Yeah, on a nationally televised game this year, John Farrell went out to the mound to pull Addison Reed after Addison Reed had already started a batter, so you can't pull him. He didn't know the rules. So this is on national television. He's trying to pull a guy. He doesn't know the rule. They have to send him back. And then did you hear anybody after the loss the other day when players were asked about John Farrell's job, any of them saying, we need John back? Not one guy stood up and said that.
I didn't think the Red Sox were going to have the guts to do this. I didn't. And they did. Now the search begins. Who will it be? Will it be a fiery guy? Will it be a big-time baseball, when I say X's and O's, a guy who's a real big-tard baseball guy? Will it be a free spirit, a Tito Francona, who knows baseball but the players like and respect? I can tell you this. You find me a manager that every player loves, and I'll show you a team that does not win. Respects is different. I cannot stand the term player's coach or player's manager. Because if the players love him all the time, that means he's not tough enough on them. You got to have the players sometimes with a little bit of fear, a little bit of wonderment. You got to have a little bit of that. Player. When I say player, I like a guy that the players can relate to and respect. I don't want a nice guy that's just – I don't want him to be their buddy. I'm not your – but my dad – I'm not my kids – my sons. I'm not their friend and my daughter. I'm their friend second. I am their dad first. When I find a manager, I need to find one that they respect, that there's a respectful fear like you would have with your father, and that knows baseball and actually knows situations, how not to bat out of order. That would help. So the search, there's got to be a guy who, when he draws a line in the sand – the players know not to cross it.
You said that a lot of people thought he was going to lose his job. And for me, it was one of those things where his starting pitching failed him. But then on the other hand...
But he's a pitching expert.
That's what he was hired for originally.
Yeah. Again, it goes back to, can he go out there and throw it? No, he can't. But then on the other hand, there were several guys that had a good year last year that didn't this year. Porcello, Jackie Bradley Jr., Bogarts, your guy Mookie Betts. How do you go from them having a good year to the next year not being able to get the best out of your own guys?
I think they also, well, I mean, baseball's a cyclical thing. Unless your name's Mike Trout or Jose Altuve, people have bad years.
That's a lot of guys.
Yeah, it is.
It's not just Carlos that Gonzalez and the Rockies.
If you're asking
a bad
me,
year.
Yes,
that's four guys.
If you're asking me if that entire bad year, if Bogart's swinging the bat falls on Farrell, I don't believe that. It's the other things that you had mentioned, Brian, and some of the things. Certain pitching changes, pulling a pitcher out at a time, or leaving him in too long. Or some of the base running woes that they had early in the season. That falls on the coach of doing those elementary fundamental things. And I personally think it got to a point. I think some of the players like him. I think that there was a respect factor problem. And when respect goes, your team goes. So you're exactly right. On a 3-2 pitch, when Bogarts waves at one in the dirt, is that Farrell's fault? No. But ultimately, as always, the boss, meaning the manager or the coach, the pitcher or the quarterback, or your star. That's where it usually falls on. And nobody had a superstar season in Boston this year other than Chris Sale. That was it. Nobody, I'm talking about a super. Devers showed, and Kimbrel. Yeah. I tell you, that's obvious. I mean, talking about every day that you see, and I guess a pitcher you see it once every 5 days, but Kimbrel that had one of those where say, that's a stud. Devers has got a future, and we know there's Mookie Betts as a star, but they picked a wrong season for a whole bunch of guys to play average. And they didn't do a great job this offseason of going and getting hitting. They just didn't. That falls on Dombrowski, falls on ownership, and it falls on John Farrell that he didn't demand it. If he did, then it was a mistake.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. They need to get another hitter, and they need to get somebody else in the rotation. And that part is not on Farrell. That's going to be what determines Dombrowski's fate going forward.
Game 5, Indians-Yankees. It's Sabathia versus Kluber. I like Kluber in it at home.
Unfortunately, I like the Yankees.
Yeah, well, there you go. Or you just kind of wish for the Yankees.
No, I don't want the Yankees.
That's odd. Sox fan rooting for the Yankees against Tito.
This is the Sean Salisbury Show. Here are your hosts, the Benchwarmers and Sean Salisbury.
All right, joining us now, we've got college football aficionado. We threw her up into the Northeast now. She's up there in that Northeast out of the Texas area. She works for NBC Sports in Boston, covers the Red Sox and Patriots, does a great job for them. At Kacie Smith, K-A-Y-C-E Smith on Twitter, joins us here on the Sean Salisbury Show. Kacie, welcome in.
Thanks, guys. I've missed you.
It's good to have you on. Miss having you, and it's glad we got a lot to talk about in Boston sports and in college football. So let's start with the big news right now in Boston is John Farrell. Agree or disagree, what's the pulse in Boston about him being out of his job?
I 100% agree with the decision, and I think for the most part people kind of assumed it was going to happen. And look, obviously it's not all his fault what happened this season with the team, but he's the easy scapegoat when it comes to a lot of the off-the-field drama that went on. And if you're trying to sell a fan base on excitement for next year, having John Farrell come back with all the same players in place, that would have been a really tough thing to do. And I think at the end of the day, Dave Dombrowski looked at that and said, well, if we're going to start to sell tickets again and people get excited about the potential talent on this roster, John Farrell just has to go. He made a lot of bad decisions throughout the year, but at the end of the day, it wasn't all his fault. I think this was just the easiest thing to do to get a culture change. And I think most people are on board with it, even though it's pretty obvious that he couldn't have saved this team from themselves. He just happened to make some bad decisions along the way as well.
And Kacie, you mentioned those bad decisions. They seem to happen a lot. You know, stuff that just is non-common sense baseball. The guy's won. He's got him a World Series. But, you know, when you hit out of order and you pull a guy that you don't know you're supposed to pull and you put somebody in a position and it seems like every other week there was something going on the field that was just not managerial style.
Yeah, it was bizarre a lot of times. You look at it and you're like, okay, I'm watching this on television or I'm at the ballpark and I know that you can't make that decision. And you even look at how he managed the bullpen throughout the year or different lineup changes like you mentioned. And you're just like, you know, what is this guy thinking? But I think the bigger thing, Sean, was really just kind of how the entire clubhouse in general didn't seem to always get along with him. You know, you had Drew Pomerantz early in the season yelling at him in the dugout in front of the national television cameras. You had Dustin Pedroia coming out and almost calling him out during the Orioles season early on, saying it's not me, it's them. It just seemed like there was just dysfunction in the clubhouse, which led to this team just not being very likable. And at the end of the day, Red Sox fans always want their team to win, but they just weren't a likable team because of a lot of the things that John Farrell did, a lot of the things that Dustin Pedroia and David Price did. So like I said, at the end of the day, not only did he make bad decisions on the field that made you scratch your head, he just kind of added to the fact that this team just was very unlikable. And by the end of the season, it seemed like fans just didn't really trust and or think this team was going to make a postseason run anyway. So I think he had to go in order to change that perception.
Hey, Kacie, if we were sitting around in a conference room with all the players on this year's team having a beer and they said, well, you know, nobody's going to say anything, what do you think the percentage of players would say they support this move? How many of them?
I would say probably, I mean, I don't know if I want to go all the way with 80%, but I'd say more than half. I really, from what we understand, and of course nobody's ever going to come out and say it, but there's a lot of talk about how they just didn't like his communication a lot of times, that it just wasn't good, which isn't surprising because his communication in front of the media was so bad. So you've got to believe that it was bad with his players as well. But one of the things that this team constantly harped on a lot of times was that they didn't like that he didn't stand up for him, which is ridiculous in its own right. But if you've got players who are mad that your manager is not standing up for you and he feels like he has to go out in front of the media and say things that are obviously not true, but he's trying to protect his players, that alone is just a mess. So, you know, you look at what happened with this. Eckersley, just every single explanation and example throughout the season led me to believe they didn't like him and he necessarily wasn't a great leader, so that this was going to have to happen, especially if Dave Dombrowski wants to save his job in the long run.
Casey Smith, NBC Sports Boston, joins us here on the Sean Salisbury Show. All right, Casey, what's next for the Red Sox? I mean, obviously they need right-handed power, but more importantly, who's going to be in the dugout managing this team? The name Alex Cora comes up. There's going to be a bunch of names bannered about. Any pulse on, finger on the pulse of what's going on with that right now?
Alex Cora is the name that keeps coming up because, you know, you A.J. Hinch coming out and saying that not only he can connect with players, but he's got that baseball intellect and obviously the familiarity with the Red Sox. That's the name you hear the most. But like you said, Sean, there's a ton of names that are going to kind of come up. You know, Brad Ausmus being one of those, Jason Varitek being on that list, and even Gary DeSarcina, which I don't necessarily think will happen because Dave Dombrowski said he wants kind of a – he didn't say it, but he basically said he wants a whole new staff. But at the end of the day, just getting rid of John Farrell is not going to fix this team. They can't just bring somebody in with the same roster and say, okay, it's all going to be fixed. They're going to go to the World Series. They've got to go out and get a power bat in the middle of a lineup. They've got to bring a leader in that clubhouse. So whoever they do bring in at manager has a lot on his plate. And hopefully, and I do believe that the Red Sox organization understands, whoever that is not going to be enough to garner the interest of this team and to make it to that next step in the postseason.
Switching to football, Casey, how – this AC sprain and Brady's non-throwing shoulder, I'm sure people panicked a little bit, but he's having a monster year. How healthy is he, and is there any worry that he won't be ready to play at full strength?
Well, you know, Sean, people up here in Boston live and die by what Tom Brady does. I mean, this guy, he can say he doesn't eat tomatoes, and the entire city of Boston stops eating tomatoes. So anything with him does kind of garner that panic, and whenever – it was announced that he didn't practice yesterday. It was immediately like, okay, how injured is he? He was back on the practice field today, even though the Patriots said he did not participate. He was out there. Our cameras caught it. So maybe he didn't participate enough to be put on that on the injury report as that he did. But at the same time, they just got to protect him, Sean. You know that better than anybody. Like, if he doesn't get the protection that he needs, whether it's from the offensive line, the running game, whether, you know, the deep routes, developing quicker, whatever it takes, he just can't keep getting hit like he does. I mean, nobody's going to be able to withstand that, 40 years old or not. And the fact that we know he can turn his body and land on his left side, that's all fine and good. But if you're getting hit over 100 times a season, which is what he's on pace to get hit, nobody's going to be able to stand that. So the panic is definitely there. I do think they'll figure it out, but they've got a lot of different things to work on if they're going to keep protecting Tom Brady and keep him healthy throughout this season.
And that old dude's 11 touchdowns and one pick and playing great football. It's absolutely amazing. Okay, Casey, I think a lot of us are a bit shocked. Not that the defense isn't keeping up with the offense, but the fact that they're awful right now. Is there any way this can be fixed in 2017?
I think so. I think it was really interesting to see against Tampa Bay that when they, you know, matched up the corners on specific receivers, that seemed to be the answer for Stephon Gilmore. I don't know what they're going to do moving forward, but that you're right. The defense has just been garbage, and you're looking at it and saying, okay, it's a Bill Belichick team. You know that it might take a little bit for it to come together, but how bad this defense has been through 5 weeks of the season, even though they kind of got a little bit better, especially in the secondary last week, it is kind of worrisome because you're like, what possibly could you bring in that's going to be able to help stop the run, be able to stop giving up those big plays? I think everybody's panic level is a little bit less after they played the Buccaneers. But again, Jameis Winston had a lot to do with that as well. So I think they'll get back on track. However, I don't know if this is going to be anywhere near the team a lot of people thought they were going to be, especially because they can't stay healthy on the defensive side of the ball either.
Kate,
so I don't know. We'll see.
Casey, do we have to just accept the fact that Gronkowski is going to be a week-to-week thing every week?
I think that's fair. I do. And, you know, he's got all those incentives in his contract that, you know, the more he's out there, the millions of dollars he can make. But let's be honest, it's Rob Gronkowski. Can he ever really stay healthy? I mean, that's the whole thing with this guy.
All right, let's switch to the swagger part of the Patriots. Brady's there. They have swagger. They're reigning Super Bowl champions. Do they still have it in light of what's been going on with their defense and offensive line? Does the swagger still exist in Patriots complex?
I think it does because you have Tom Brady, because you've got the greatest of all time there. You've still got Bill Belichick, and you do have kind of the Patriot way of doing things. However, during the summer when everyone was talking about, oh, this team's going to be 19-0, I sat back and said, you just can't say that about a team that's so unproven with a lot of different question marks, especially once Julian Edelman got hurt. But any given Sunday, which is such a cliche, but any given Sunday, somebody's going to be able to beat them. And because Kansas City did it in week one, I think a lot of people kind of stepped back and said, okay, this isn't the team that we thought they could be. But if you've got Tom Brady at quarterback and a healthy Tom Brady, you can't ever count them out. I think they can still be a Super Bowl contender. They've just got a lot of things they've got to figure out in the meantime.
Let's switch to college football. Casey, you're a college football aficionado, and a team you used to cover quite often, the Texas A&M Aggies. A lot of talk about Kevin Sumlin. They've been in some close games that they shouldn't have been in, and then they were in a really good game and a close game against Alabama. For Kevin Sumlin, did the Alabama closeness of it save his job, or do we still got to see how they fare against an LSU team? Is it still up in the air in your mind?
I think it's still up in the air, but I do think that his seat got a lot cooler. I mean, especially when you look at that Vegas spread, what everybody expected that Alabama game to be. It was just everyone thought it was going to be a hot mess and a bloodbath, and it ended up not being that. However, knowing Texas A&M and what Kevin Sumlin has done in the last few years is that if this team takes a tank like they have, you know, in the past few seasons, and I think he's still going to get fired regardless of how close that game was, especially because the SEC is down. I mean, LSU is not the same team they were the last couple of years, but I do think Alabama helped just a little bit, but that UCLA loss is still in the back of everybody's mind. But Kellen Mond looked good. The offense looked good. So I think he's safe for now. It just depends on how many wins and losses he has going down the second stretch of the season.
Who's the best team you've seen in college football this year?
I think it's Alabama. I really do. I think it's going to be an Alabama-Clemson rematch in the national championship. It's going to, you know, round three of that. I was really on board with Oklahoma, knowing fully well that it's the Big 12 and their defense is usually pretty garbage. I still think Baker Mayfield's the best quarterback in the league, though. No, it wasn't his fault they lost to Iowa State, but I'm going to have to stick with Alabama for now.
Okay, finally, before we let you go, and we appreciate your time, you made the switch from Texas up to Boston sports. You got two diehard Red Sox fan here. Brian loves the Patriots, and, I mean, it's a great sports town. What have you learned about the passion of Boston sports now that you're working for NBC there?
I'm not just pandering to Boston fans. I can honestly say this and mean it 100%. There is no sports fan base like there is in Boston. I mean, college football's crazy. That's the one thing they don't like up here, so it's a little bit different. But when you look at professional sports, every single thing that goes on here, people are so emotionally attached to it, and I love it. I mean, it's for better or worse. People love you or hate you, but they love their sports up here, and so it's a hell of a lot of fun. I just wish they liked college football. That's the one thing that's missing. They just don't care up here, and I don't understand why.
There you go. Finally, now let me ask you this. In the short time you've been there, is it a Bruins town, Red Sox town, Patriots town, or Celtics town?
It's a Patriots town. It really is. I mean, of course, you've got the bubbles of every different team, but we put out a poll last Thursday when the Patriots are playing, the Red Sox are in postseason, and the Bruins season opener was happening, and 55% of people said if they could only watch one thing, it would be the Patriots game on Thursday Night Football. So people can't get enough, but at the same time, and you've got the diehard Red Sox, Celtics, and Bruins. I still have to get used to hockey up here, Sean. That's the newest thing for me, learning that people actually love hockey. That's completely different than down in Texas.
Boy, I wish we had a team here in Houston. Lucky you. Casey, great stuff. We appreciate you spending time with us, and we'll do it again. And continued success at NBC and up there in Boston and that great sports town. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Thanks. That's Casey Smith, NBC Sports in Boston. You can get her at Casey Smith on Twitter. That's K-A-Y-C-E. Well, we got to ask Sean. She was talking about the product of the New England Patriots. How rampant is that across the league? I think we got a question that concerns Sundays as opposed to Saturdays. Robin, Brian, Adam, Bobby Beats is here. It's the Sean Salisbury Show right here on BN Sports.
It's time for Ask Sean on the Sean Salisbury Show.
It's the Sean Salisbury Show. It's BN Sports. You want to play a little Ask Sean here, brother, in the last few minutes?
Yeah. How do you feel, I think we talked about this on the local show the other day, how do you feel about the NFL product that's being put on the field so far through 5 weeks?
Worst I've seen in the years I've played it and covered it, and it really is. Now, there was special performance, what Hunt's doing and Smith and that. There's a group, but as a whole, game in and game out, and we watch every game. Early games, go home and watch them. The ones that don't show up on your local on our channel, you can tape or with the NFL package. To me, it's as inconsistent, as poor as I've ever seen the product on the field. I'm not even talking about all the other there's politics going on. I'm just talking about when the ball kicks off to when the game ends. See, people mistake close games for good games. Big difference. The Giants and the Chargers were in a close game. That's not good football. Bigger, faster, stronger athletes than 15 years ago? They're not better. They're not better players. And the product is not better. September is the new August. We're still in training camp mode, heading in now as we are a couple weeks into October. It's as bad as I've ever seen it, playing or watching it or covering it.
The injuries this year have been bad.
Injuries to stars even more so.
Yeah. The other thing I would say is, like, the only week I came away satisfied was that week two. Remember the end of the One Eastern games? Mm-hmm. There was a bunch of really
like
nice
finishes.
Like five
of them were coming down to the wire.
And
that was good football.
Right. And you had one Thursday night game, the Niners and the Rams. It was incredibly exciting. And we learned last week, like, even Tom Brady can't make Thursday night football interesting, because that game between the Buccaneers and the Patriots was awful.
Okay, you tell me, and you just mentioned, you tell me 5 weeks in the season, which is, we just started our buys last week, so you're talking a couple hundred games, I guess. Something like, you know, whatever it's been. You tell me you can walk away from there in five games and say that was great football. For four quarters of hellified football. You find me five games you said, now that is why I watch every Sunday five times this year. You can't.
You can
last
find, like,
Sunday, the early games were pathetic. Absolutely pathetic football.
You can find entertaining ones. Like I mentioned, the Rams and the 49ers. The Patriots-Panthers game was entertaining. The Patriots-Texans game was entertaining. But saying, like, we've had quality play week in and week out, we have.
When you watch coaches' decisions and sacks and bad defense
in the
Patriots-Texans game, that wasn't good football.
No, but it's entertaining.
We saw flashes of Watson, flashes of Brady, great football, which we see. I can name you eight guys that are going to give me great football every week. For the
or
most
units.
Part. Yes, that I know. The Packers throwing it, the Patriots throwing it, Drew Brees throwing it. I'm going to get really good football. But the overall product in the National Football League, it's never been worse.
The most excitement has come from the rookies. Kareem Hunt, Deshaun Watson, even Mitchell Trubisky the other night. That was a good game.
I'll tell you what, those two first rookies you mentioned have been as big a buzz as we've had in the league this year, and rightfully so. They're both lights out. And you know what? Kareem Hunt better be careful. Deshaun Watson, because he's got the ball in his hand 70 snaps a game, is going to try to chase him down for this Rookie of the Year. It's the Sean Salisbury Show. We'll see you tomorrow.